quickly with one voice that we had these things in front of us, so that the new person does not change our program. Because it is possible if a new chairperson comes and a new chairperson can do something else, something more differently to what we have done. Thank you very much. I'm just cautioning you. I'm not saying respond to it, Comrade Honorable Sadi. DG, I'm giving over to you. Upay to chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would try to maybe let me first start with the introductions of the colleagues who are here. The two colleagues that represent the Office of the Minister and the Office of the Deputy Minister is Justin De Allende, is our new parliamentary liaison officer, and Mr. Philemon Khoza, the gentleman at the extreme right, PLO for the Deputy Minister. And then I have our economist here, Mr. Sfison Ntombela, the gentleman. DDGs are with me, DDG Tlhakudi, you know him, DDG Mbono, and DDG Mudisani. And myself, I'm Hukari Silike, Director General Public Enterprise. Mbono, yes. It's Mbono, yes. Oh. Sisutu. Oh. Okay, Mbono. All right, please, she hasn't corrected me. All right, Mbono, ne? Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, thank you. We are here to present to the committee today the progress in as far as procurement and localization, in as far as the competitive supply development program is concerned. The main objective of that program, which was to leverage state-owned companies' procurements for development and transformation. And for shortening in terms of acronym, this Competitive Supplier Development Program, we normally shorten it to CSDP. So as I make reference to CSDP, I shouldn't lose you along the way. It involves planning, execution of procurement to promote investments in the plants, meaning our capacity to manufacture, skills development, investment in new technology, and also to continue to enhance existing capabilities that our country had for many years. It's important that we continue to improve on those capabilities. As an outcome, we are expecting to have new emerging suppliers as a way to grow industrialization.
DJ, my apologies, please. We did not get an apology from the ministry, but I know the deputy minister has sent an apology because he did not know that there's an extended cabinet meeting today. So that is why he is not with us. So the minister is obviously also in the cabinet meeting, the extended cabinet. And yeah.
Apologies, Chairperson. I thought they had sent the written one, but let me confirm that. Apology. I spoke to her, and she requested a late apology. Thank you, Chair. And of the main objective, if I take you through slide number 3, is to make sure that we reduce the cost through increasing efficiencies. One of the reasons why our industrial programs have slowed down is because of this very issue of our efficiencies are very low, and in modern day economies that are globalized, you have to have reduce your cost to the minimal, and you have to be efficient, the speed at which you are producing, to stay competitive. So that's one area. Reducing the dependency on imports and foreign exchange exposures, because that's a reality. The only way jobs can be created is when manufacturing is happening locally. And also developing niche exports market areas. So those are the three main issues. I think I'll elaborate more as we go. Next slide looks at the measures against which some of these performance indicators. And maybe for clarity purpose, largely we're looking at Transnet and Eskom, DINEL, I think those three. Those are companies that spend more money, and that's where we are implementing this program. So the measures of industrialization are based on the levels of local content. It means each and every product that is produced, there has to be certain components in there that are produced locally, and they are to be measured as a percentage of the final product. Technology transfer also looks at how have we structured the transfer of the technology, particularly by original equipment manufacturers, big multinationals whom we give these jobs, such as China Rail, North China Rail, General Electric, you name them. So part and parcel of the component, it is expected that as they manufacture, they have to do technology transfer. Skills development, these are dedicated programs run both by Transnet, Eskom, and Eskom, where they are training previously disadvantaged individuals, particularly in areas where ordinarily there are not many. Investments in the plants also is that in the process of the production of these mega projects, such as the locomotive programs, then there has to be new investments in the plant. I think that I'll talk to also. Small business participation. There's also a great expectation that small businesses should be very active, should be stimulated and given the greater portion, either directly or through subcontracting arrangements. The job creation, the numbers also have to be calculated throughout the value chain. Also export promotion initiatives to make sure that those products that are produced also are exported to niche markets. Now transformation is also another area. We look at the triple B spent, how much in the total spent as a percentage goes to triple BEE. Also black woman owned company spent, and also we look at disability spent and youth also. So those are the criteria that we look at. And if I to look at the Transnet Supplier Development Program, since inception, this program, local content is valued to the total value of 30.8 billion. And those are the numbers. Jobs preserved also to the value of 3.9 billion. So this number in itself may need to be split further going forward into a percentage of how much was spent. But to be specific, this is how much was spent. What we need to do going forward, which is something we're still working on, they're running the data, we have the numbers in terms of the individuals, but we must be able to report to the committee to say these numbers were based either in Mpumalanga or they were based, so that it's traceable. I think that's another thing. But we are working on improving our data to that level. ESCOM, also, those are the numbers in as far as localization. 116.89 billion for about 58 billion to black-owned women. Those are the numbers. But let me take you through a slide that looks at the specific projects, like the 1064 locomotives. The commitments that are in place in terms of the 1064. On the extreme right, you'll see is the company, which are the original equipment manufacturers. You have General Electric, followed by China South Rail, and then followed by China North Rail, and then the last one is Bombardier Transportation. And the quantities also, there's an explanation in terms of what they were producing. GE was given 233 diesel locomotives, and the number of the locomotives completed were 6. And then also you've got the manufacturing assembly. It tells you where were they manufactured. Part and parcel of the arrangement was that a certain percentage will be produced from home and another percentage will be produced locally in South Africa, meaning there were those that were produced from America, the USA. There were those that were produced in China, like that. And the statistics is there explaining itself that 227 will be manufactured in South Africa. And I think I need to also highlight to the committee, the percentages are there if you look into the report, because this is a very straightforward report. When we visited the manufacturing plant, which is the new plant, as I said, as part and parcel of the measure, we also look at the investments in the plant. There's a new plant that Transnet has put together in Durban. We visited that plant, and these companies are operating back-to-back, meaning General Electric and China North and South Rail in a chain format. So it starts from component by component up until the locomotives have been completed. And I think this is one project I would encourage the committee to visit as a verification, to see the skills development, to see all these things that we are reporting.
The GE one?
Yeah, even GE is in the same plant. It's just compartments, meaning when you enter the plant, you start with the GE portion, and then you move into the China portion. I think the idea was to make sure that the entire cycle happens and gets completed, because I think certain components are common, even if it is diesel or electric, depending on whether it's an axle or the wheels or whatever. And I think I can say that these numbers, if you go through that process, then you can relate the numbers to reality. If you visit, it will be good that you should have this report in your hand and be able to ask some of the pertinent questions. And these are the numbers that shows also on the China South Rail. There were, I think, teething problems in terms of the local manufacturing when we were visiting there to ask them what are the challenges. but I think ESCOM, Transnet, has resolved those challenges. I think they were just systems where when they operate in China, they use a different system. When they were here, a different system. So, but I think they've resolved that skills transfer. It was a skills transfer issue. And when we were there, we began to see that, no, the numbers are beginning to move. I think more important... In as far as the challenges broadly, I must say that I cannot say that this program is moving at the speed that we want in as far as skills development and and supplier creating new local suppliers is concerned. And the challenges that comes with it are based, I think, largely on the fact that manufacturing is not an overnight thing. It takes time for it to pick up speed and pace. And sometimes the targets that we set rigid targets that are time bound. And the reality of the matter is sometimes we need to have more longer-term targets. And even if a program fails, we must always create an opportunity to allow them space to perfect it, or else we won't have a local manufacturer. So Chairperson and honorable members of the committee, there are the numbers. If we move to the total numbers of suppliers that have been utilized. China North Rail, there are the numbers that shows how many, the small ones, how many, and the total numbers of suppliers. And the black women-owned suppliers also, the numbers are quite impressive as you look. We believe that also these numbers can be increased. If I take you to the next slide, also we're looking at the total number of jobs that have been preserved per OEM. Grand total is about 1,139 jobs. I think there's also the statistical breakdown of those. The next slide looks at the rolling stock breakdown, the breakdown of the parts that were set aside for local suppliers. So I think some of this terminology, I may not be accurate about it, but you can see that those are the from 1 up to 33, yes. If Chairperson allows, I would suggest that Sfiso takes us through that statistics. Sfiso, are you there? Yeah, take us through that, what it means in simple terms, the numbers, the figures. Yeah, try to also be not too technical.
What this table tried to show is basically, as the DG mentioned earlier, that also we're looking at the transformation element of it. So in this specific program that is run through Transnet, what this table is giving you is the number of suppliers that are then part of the program. So it's on your far left, it's the actual companies that are participating in the program. So when we're looking at then the first, the second column, look at the black ownership of those companies that are participating into this program. And then the third column looks at the black woman ownership in those companies. And then it shows to your far right the exact components that then are supplied into this, which are manufactured locally. So it basically shows the transformation elements of these companies that are participating in it. So you can clearly see that in terms of black woman ownership is still relatively low to the target that we want. But there are certain pockets of success where, like the company number 4, where you can see up to 68% of that company, it's black owned, it's black woman owned company. So there's some sort of some mixed success and some other issues that still need to be improved to ensure that the transformation elements are met into the program. And then it sort of just give all these companies exactly the same elements that I've mentioned throughout the number 33 as the DG has mentioned. That's basically it is on what we're trying to show there in those tables.
Thank you very much. The reality is that in as far as the statistics, we don't have a single company that is 100% black-owned, but I think these are the targets that we will have to push harder and harder going forward. Okay. Now, if you look into the almost the last slide, the last slide we are saying in that last slide that we need to do an independent verification, and I think we're working closely with the DTI. I think there was one presentation we made jointly with the DTI to the committee to can find ways of fast tracking localization, and so far we're putting pressure. The realization also on our part is that when we squeeze the company on certain broader targets, they cut corners because they want to achieve corporate targets. Now, then we have learned that sometimes we must be allow them space to lower the corporate target so that they can increase the localization target. So the two will go together. So I think that's the summary of our presentation, that localization, there's a lot that will improve. There's a document that we are working on to find new ways of fast-tracking localization. I think that particular strategy, as it comes through, we'll share it with the committee and we'll take it through. There's improvements that we can put out of the lessons that we have learned. But so far, that is the progress that is in place. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. I will now give over to the honourable members for clarity seeking questions and for questions. Honourable Luyenge Pedi, Honourable Kungbe.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Let me appreciate the report and also the endeavors by the department to ensure that they reach this important goal. But my question, Chair, will be to check as to whether is there any arrangement between the department and other departments like the trade and industry as it relates to a broader mechanism that seeks to ensure that even entities that do not fall under this particular department are also playing a role complementing what public enterprise will be doing as a strategy. And lastly, maybe in terms of funding, is there any contemplation on the part of the department to ensure that within a particular space of time, a government is aware of this goal that they have set with time frames, and so that we can be able to maybe conduct oversight or over that. So the availability of funding to that effect is important, even if it's not coming to the relevant bodies over and above those that are under the auspices of the department. Go ahead.
Chair, let me welcome the presentation as well and echo the same sentiments, to commend the department with regard to the work that is being done, especially in the area of transformation. And the work that has been done around black women-owned suppliers. Three issues that I will need to be clarified on. The presentation says since exception, and the question is when was the program started? And linked to that one is your strategies to detect fronting, especially in the area of local content. If a company says we are a black-owned company, do you have a strategy to confirm that indeed it is a black-owned company?
not fronting on behalf of some other people. Yeah, I think those are the two issues that I will need to clarify now.
Thanks, thanks, Chair. I just want to also thank the DG for that kind of presentation. I'm just curious to DG to know that, knowing the difficult during the transition of sometimes those who are affirmed who misunderstand the purpose, because I guess the intention is to flood the commercial environment with productive entrepreneurs who are domestically groomed. But there's always a risk of getting wrong people who just want money, because they usually look at this as an intention of increasing the capacity of government. Because building these people is about increasing the capacity of government to actually take the commercial intensity of South Africa to a higher level. How then do we, as we identify these suppliers who are prospects for development, putting them in this space, how do we, is it not difficult, how do we distinguish that this is an entrepreneur? The second issue is the issue of, do we have predetermined goals? Like, as we enter the space with GE, with China, do we have a plan? I move from a point that we must have said the economy is performing in this fashion now. For the economy to deliver to South Africa, it's supposed to perform in a particular way. Now, the role of homebrew, what do you call, developments of suppliers, is this, and their quantity by a certain period in these various categories should be so. Do we have a predetermined set of numbers to say, China, we are meeting with you in this area, if it's manufacturing locomotives, the COCSD, whatever, your competitive supplier development program, must give us so much over a particular period? And is there any regular interaction, timelessly, to check if that is happening before getting shocked at the end of the call, at the end of the project? If we have that, do we have them scrolled somewhere so that we are able to follow them together with you at the same time? But sometimes my worry is that we tend to say, we partner with you, we expect you to do ABC. At the end of the year, we get shocked when that is not done. Like there was no predetermined sort of approach on how things would happen. So that if China fails to produce the kind of suppliers we want, we say, no, you failed the program. You want somebody else or something like that. Are there predetermined sort of goals in that area?
Thank you, honorable members. My question might be the same or more or less the same question with what honorable Kungubele has asked now, because I'm looking at the General Electric South Africa, the number of locomotives that have been completed. You are saying they've been completed. You're not saying what they have been completed from which time to the time frame they have taken for the six completed locomotives, and also the 227, which is 55. You say it's 55% local content commitment. Is it going to be completely South African, or is it still going to be a mixture of China, USA, and South Africa? When do you expect a South African product that is none from the other countries? Do you have a student or human resource that you think is ready to do the work on their own without the program of transfer of skills, without depending on what is coming out of the other countries? Or when will that happen? In all these programs that Usfiso has spoke about, on the rolling of stocks, is there a skill transfer program in all these companies, and also a youth development program? That because I'm looking at this program, there are youth programs there, I think, but is there in every program from 1 up to 33, do you have youth development program within those programs? Because at the end of the day, as much as you have said, it's not completely, there is no South African or local company that is only black. It is a mixture of people. Do we have youth programs that, I mean, South Africans only, without other people from other countries? Thank you.
Give over to you, Digital. Well, Chair, thank you. Thank you very much. I must say that since 2007, I think this is a way of answering when the program started. We have learned a lot, I think. But needless to say, I think let's be practical about certain realities. Is that this capacity has always been in the country. But we made certain choices, I think, early. And those choices, to a certain extent, affected our capacity. Now we are rebuilding this capacity again. I think what is important to note is that countries develop because they choose to. You develop a manufacturing capacity as a country because you choose to do so, and you accept the realities that it's going to be a journey. You preempt it, and then you put everything in place to support that journey. Now, there are certain struggles we have to go through. I'm highlighting this as a practical issue. Dinel, for instance, Dinel has the capacity to build a helicopter. And I'm talking not just a helicopter that flies, a helicopter that fights. And that is, it's comparable to the best in the world. And that capability, if you have it, how come you can't build a car if you can build a helicopter? I'm just trying to highlight this dynamism to say skills and capabilities are there. We have to invest in them as a country to accept. If we want to have, let's say, a 100% local South African car, it's achievable. But we have to commit to it. Like we have done now with the locomotive, the first Africa locomotive, which we can call our own, it has been completed. Of course, but I think I need to highlight something very important, that in terms of parts, you may not necessarily have 100% everything South African. You might probably get certain components of the engine from somewhere. because they have an IP in that area and they beat you. But if 80% of the entire component is yours, then you can call the product yours, because the beneficiation in terms of the parts, that's why we have put up a list of all those parts that have been set aside for local suppliers. Because now already it tells you that if these local suppliers themselves also do not front, because that's another problem. If they do not front and they manufacture them locally, then you can say you've got the local suppliers. Now, normally, we, as a disclaimer in the end, we are saying that we are putting up a verification process, even to go to those local suppliers to verify if they definitely are local, producing locally, and how are they, because that's very important for us to as a country to can go somewhere. But also let me make another simplistic example, because in the department these are the things we are trying to do. I'll make an example with a smaller company like Safcol, where we looked at how Safcol operates, we look at the communities next to them, we look to the fact that the communities have their land claim is at an advanced stage. The reality of the matter is, if we cannot do local supply support on simple things like poles, we engage Eskom and say, Eskom, we want to create a local company for the communities who are already going to be the beneficiaries of land claim, so that they can have a pole treatment plant and create jobs right where they are and supply to Eskom. Because that's a simple thing. A pole is different from a transformer. It's understandable why you have to acquire a transformer from a big company, because it's a sophisticated manufactured product. But a pole that is just there to carry, transform a power line, that can come from the communities, because it simply requires manual work. I must say, it's not easy. We are battling with Safcol. In fact, if I have to be frank, the last time I engaged Safcol, they said, no, we were not aware that actually business can improve our revenue as Safcol. So we want to establish it as our own enterprise. We said no. We said that is an enterprise for the community. So I can't move as a DG to go and do your work. You did not see that opportunity beforehand. We are saying this is an opportunity for the communities. We want to see the success of cooperatives and the success of local companies. So I'm just making that simplistic example that if we are dedicated, there's a lot that can be achieved with simple things. But sometimes the commitment is not there on the part of the CEOs and the leadership that are there in the companies. We realize, Chairperson, that the CEOs of state-owned companies, sometimes their focus is on the corporate management. It's like they see themselves like CEOs in the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. They are chasing targets of profitability, and which is correct. But the developmental targets sometimes are secondary. But now we realize through the state-owned company reform process that we have to also not assume that they understand. We have to probably put it on paper as part and parcel of their core performance product contract, and even be elementary in explaining what we want, because this area is not given the attention that it requires. It's a fact that we accept, and we realize that must happen. So I'm trying to get to the strategies part to say, in terms of detecting the fronting, we will have to we are thinking of a survey that goes through, and that will be done by an independent company that will look, but we'll do it jointly with DTI. Because DTI also has cautioned us that also the targets that are set against this original equipment manufacturers need to be evaluated and pinned down. So we accept that that must happen. The challenges that we also come across, I must say, is that I like using this example from farming, agriculture. First job that I did, I was a lecturer on business management. And the realization is that the students that were graduating out of us were going into the streets. We get feedback from them. Most of them were unemployed. So as a college, we put together a proposal and we took it to the Department of Agriculture to say, we are training these students, and these students actually should become farmers. Why don't you put them up front in the list of beneficiaries of farms so that you know that these ones are trained? You don't need to go and get other people and start training them. But that was never implemented. Now I want to come to manufacturing again. Now, with manufacturing, to understand manufacturing, you need engineering background. And most of the people really who sometimes get these things, you realize that now, the engineering background is not, it's lacking. And when you lack an expertise of doing something, obviously you'll have problems. There are voluntary severance packages proposals that are sitting on the desk of the minister, I think submitted by Transnet. I think ESCOM had some because they feel they were overcapacitated on certain areas. So we're looking at, with them, rather looking at those people actually be given an opportunity also to become SMMEs, to become suppliers, because they have the skill, they have the capacity. It sometimes... We will move faster as a country when we give opportunities to the right people. I think that's maybe the safe word to use. Because the right people have got the passion, they've already dedicated their life into that area, and they are likely to give us the benefits. And we also have to structure it in such a way that there's a discipline under which these things are allocated. I think let me safely say it that way. Chairperson, at some point, I think we will arrive at a point where we can have 100% South African product. And that's the only time our jobs can increase as a country. We accept that as a fact. And I'm saying so because in terms of skills transfer, that is the question you've asked around youth development program. We're producing big numbers. On the part of skills development, maritime, if you can look at the report by Transnet, the graduates that are coming out of the maritime, the numbers are good. But the problem is the economy is not absorbing all of them. We are looking also at a comprehensive Africa strategy to open new markets so that those that our economy cannot absorb, then we can open up new markets for them to be absorbed in. But that can only happen if we upscale industrial development in the country. So these things go together. I'm being very frantic to say, if you produce high numbers of skills and you do not upscale manufacturing, you'll still have a problem. And we are in that state now. So we really have to focus all our effort on industrial development. This localization is a key to unlock that. And we must have discipline in how it is done so that a lot of these problems that are there, gatekeeping, these things going to the wrong people, the economy is not benefiting out of it. So we that's why I'm saying we are now working on a document on how, and we're also trying to be hard on the companies so that they stay the course, because it's easy to give us a product, but getting a product on a table, if I'm sick today, I need a medicine, I get a tablet, I'm okay. But over time, this tablet is becoming too expensive because I'm importing it. But if somebody is producing this tablet here, it gets cheaper over time. It might be expensive in the short run, but it gets cheaper over time. Why I say so? Because in producing this tablet that I buy, somebody else is getting a job. But if I focus only on getting a product as an import, and the jobs benefits are not local, we've done that in the last 15 years, but we are now feeling the pain of unemployment. I think that's the summary of all the questions. Have I covered all the questions? Okay, Jackie.
Thank you, Gigi. Just to probably add some color in terms of what the DG was actually indicating, in terms of the competitive supply development program, as DG indicated that we actually started having the program in 2007. The reason was that as the Department of Public Enterprises, we realized that since 1974 and 1994, many of these companies, they did not invest quite a lot. As a result, the manufacturing industry was dismantled. So we really had to intervene in the economy. And the way we actually thought of actually doing it was to say, given the fact that Eskom and Transnet were the ones that were going to undertake big infrastructure programs, and the impact would have been much more bigger, let us start and actually begin to showcase with those particular programs. And we then use them as like pilot programs. So it required the SOCs to re-engineer the systems, programs, in order for them to actually give us the desired outcomes. And in so doing, we the state-owned company, so that it actually does this through the shareholder compact. And I think when we actually came to the committee last week, we shared with the portfolio committee in terms of the compacts that we actually have. And part of that is that when the SOCs, they actually do procure, we then, on the procurement itself, when they issue the contract, that's where the targets, they're actually being put in there, because we contract with them and hold them accountable to make sure that exactly what you're talking about, black women, youth, skills transfer, is actually happening at a procurement level. So that's what I wanted to indicate. And as well, in terms of working with the other industries, this has actually helped later on with the DTI being the one that is actually responsible both for designation, whereby now they begin to say, in terms of this infrastructure development program that has been undertaken by specifically Eskom and Transnet, then we can begin to designate, because now we've built, like the DG has actually said, skills, capabilities, and those engineering skills that we actually require to build for the economy going forward. So they can designate with something practical, doable, that we've actually begun to see. So we're actually seeing that coming through. So that is actually one of the strategies that we actually are beginning to see and getting implemented. So we're actually now monitoring it with the intention now to roll it out to the all other state-owned companies, because we have to learn by doing. Because, like we're indicating, these industries were dismantled, so we said, let's use these two as the prototype, and then to be able to roll it out to then check what are the lessons learned. So we will learn by doing. Because, like DG is actually saying, engineering is a skill that takes a long time to develop and perfect. So we've actually said, initially, let's start with probably few, like we actually said there, we'll start with six and say, CSR, you actually do it. But then later on, we're expecting that skills transfer to actually happen in such a way that South Africa can now have that manufacturing capacity and industrial capability to actually supply South Africa-owned rolling stock. So that is actually what we're doing. But just to... In closing, in terms of what the DG is actually saying, is that in terms of making sure that there's no fronting and all the issues that you've actually attributed to, we are now working closely with the Department of Trade and Industry through South Africa Bureau of as SABS to make sure that when you're saying black-owned companies, black women companies, who are they? Where are they? And we also, with the DG, asking them to say, now we want to see in terms of even your reporting, can you report per provinces? And we also want to see the actual youth and the women being empowered in terms of this infrastructure bill program.
Okay. Well, Chair, I think another thing I'd want to give Ndate Thakuri, because he's an engineer himself, you see. And I think sometimes when these things are explained by the experts directly, they become easy. But I think before then, I needed to highlight something very important, because sometimes I think we bring to the committee very little things, and we avoid to pitch things that can sometimes even stimulate your mind to a level where you look at the national policy space. You look at a sector such as the coal sector, which sometimes you realize that it becomes a subject of problems. A coal sector, coal is very easy to mine. If you want to really empower local people, that is a sector that can be designated, because you've got a lot of small coal miners who can create a lot of jobs. And I mean, I interact with a lot of them, both black and white, local South Africans. Reality I want to say here is, sectors such as those ones, we could find a way of designating them that no major companies that are listed outside the country should play in that space, and you reserve it to grow local people in the mining sector, especially because the product is bought upfront. I'm putting aside the export side of coal. I'm talking about the product is bought by Eskom, which is a state-owned company, and Eskom gets money generally from the public through purchasing electricity. So literally speaking, if you expose that to multinationals that are listed outside the country, automatically this money leaves. And the reinvestment in the economy does not happen. I'm just giving a paradigm of the broader scheme of things to say, but how do you really want to cushion your economy and grow it locally? So that the conversations are looking at things that need things in the past, and you are able then to see faster growth in a. But what is problematic sometimes is that I don't understand South Africans. You find that the South Africans become the people now who will defend this position. I'm just highlighting it on the side. But let me ask Dr. Thakuri to take us.
Thank you, DG. I think at some point we must bring some of the projects that we are working with the SOC to the committee to see. DG has spoken about the African locomotive. There's also an African truck that Dinel has developed, which is a logistics truck for armies, basically to transport troops. It's an armored truck. And also you can transport, obviously, goods to the front line with that particular truck. We also have the small African regional aircraft that Dinel has is in the process of developing. They have finished the definition phase. They are working now on the development phase, which we have taken also to the economic cluster. We have received positive support. Those are, I think, the kind of projects that state-owned entities, by virtue of their sizes and also the financial muscles that they have, that they're able to do for the country. And these flagship programs are important because we are able then to get the whole sector
involved in such a project. It may be initiated by the state-owned company as an OEM, but the tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 suppliers, as through the drive of localization, are able to then draw them from the economy so that in the, we can then create jobs locally. We have shown through studies that we have commissioned, like for instance on Rooivalk, which sometimes is regarded as a failure because we could not sell it overseas. We only produced about 13 aircraft, but we have shown them that the impact on the rest of the economy has been very positive. Strategic defense packages, where we procured the likes of the Gripens and the Hawks, the localization drive there would not have been feasible without the work that was done on the Rooivalk. So if you look at it in totality, with regard to the national income statement, if I put it that way, it has been positive. So we will definitely endeavor next time to highlight those projects as case studies as we present to yourself. There was a question asked with regard to Member Lienge with regard to DTI. We are working very closely with DTI, and we want to formalize that relationship. we also want to take advantage of the fact that our former deputy minister is now in that department. So we believe that will help at least in ensuring a closer cooperation. But the signals from that environment have been positive up to now. We had a work session with them late last year, where we're looking for those opportunities where we can work together. For instance, currently we are working with DTI and Department of Agriculture and Forestry in seeing how do we leverage the solo product from SAFCO for further industrialization. There's a round table that is planned for mid-June where we're going to invite the whole of industry in exploring this particular topic. What we are also seeking to do is the investment that SAFCO is planning to do in further processing going forward. We want to ensure that the synergy is between that effort and the rest of the sector in the investments that they will be making, so that we don't end up with excess processing capacity later on, and also that we also allow for the rest of the sector's input into SAFCO plan, so that we try to look at products that ordinarily would not have looked at for the benefit of the country. Most of which products we are bringing into the country currently. And DTI really has been quite helpful and positive in those particular engagements. The question with regard to the monitoring on our side, on the shoulder compact, under socioeconomic targets, there are targets on localization that are given to the SOC. So we monitor those. But the reality, Member Mubele, is that, if people are intent on not doing well by these plans, they want to sabotage them, the money grabbers in terms of the real entrepreneurs. Very difficult sitting where we are to guard against that. But where the information comes to our attention that people are are exploiting well-intended programs for narrow needs or requirements, then we try and intervene where we can. But on the point that DG that was making, that we need to try and attract people who are knowledgeable in those sectors. We have the tinker skills. I think it's a very powerful point we need to try as much as possible get what I'll call tinker entrepreneurs into that particular space, because a lot of the businesses, especially engineering businesses that you find, for instance, in the East Rand, around the Denswart and so on, those were started by engineers. They were started as people that were working for a particular company. They gained the skill and they formed an enterprise around themselves. So we must get that receipt going, because what we are finding is that a lot of those entrepreneurs today are actually retiring, come to the end of their working life. And when they go out the door, the business falls behind them. So we need to find a way of not only getting new entrepreneurs into that particular space, but we also have to find a way of matching those old entrepreneurs who are retiring. Most of them are white, with black, young, tinkle entrepreneurs, so that those businesses continue to survive and prosper beyond the exit of their founders. I think that's where I'll stop, DJ. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
So you wanted to say something quick?
Thanks, DJ. I think I'll just comment on the last question which was mentioned by the Chair on the youth program, especially on this project. One of the things which we've done when we were coming up with the skills that need to be trained so that we are able to create a local skill, we work with the private sector, first of all, to identify where are the areas that we lack as a country in terms of skills. So we also came up with what we call a demobilization strategy to say in these construction sites, as we have a lot of youth that is currently working which is skilled, what happens then when the project comes into operation and then we have to demobilize some of these youth, especially youth and the women. So that's where also our integration with other departments have come into force, where, if I may just give you a practical example which we've seen, where we've trained also not only just on the transport and the energy sector, but we also be able to working with environmental affairs, where some of our people who are working in the construction site are now helping the Department of Environmental Affairs to fight with the issues of fire fires in that area. But also in the agriculture and the rural development with the agri-park, we have one example where one of the young fellows who is an engineer in the energy space has now turned the farm that he plants within the Mpumalanga area. We're using some of the solar to generate energy and use it into the farm itself. So that's a skill he got through this program with the training, but he's applying it into other areas of that one. Similarly, so also with the tourism industry, where we're saying that some of these construction sites that we have created, there are pockets where you can come up with tourism attraction to increase and to the participation of the local communities and areas. So we're seeing a lot of that to say that when they leave the program, they also be able to come up with some low-hanging opportunities that they can sustain themselves beyond the program. So that's basically one of the things I wanted to highlight on the youth part, to ensure that we're helping them to benefit, not just during lifetime, but beyond also the program when it comes to everything.
Chair, lastly, I think, Chair, it would be good in future for us to select certain things where we can invite the committee to come and see, like for instance, the graduation, because we hold graduations every year, both Transnet mainly, where you can see youth skills development practically. I think to visit some of these things that we talk about. I think secondly, it is the issue I need to also talk lastly, is that there's goodwill out there. There are certain stakeholders who are willing to work with government. There are other old people who are almost in retirement, who own certain assets, who are willing to transfer the assets to the previously disadvantaged individuals, provided there is a safety net, because capital is always a problem. I'll hide a simple example. I think there were two old men who had farms with the coal mining rights, and they were prepared to give those to the youth, provided there could be some form of government support. And that's why I'm saying we have to restructure our programs to assist development that way. Because I cannot understand why do you have to give capital support through a contract to foreign companies. When your own people are suffering, they want to assist each other, but you can't assist them. I'm just painting this type of picture to say there are practical realities where, to be honest and frank, if you go to other countries, those are closed. don't even listen to you whatsoever. And I think one way or another, we have to practicalize what we do. We try by all means to make sure that we bring opportunities, black, white, Indians, colored, everybody. We make sure everybody is accommodated, there's inclusive approach, particularly on the young people, because the future of the young people is beyond our life. So I think I'm just trying to say that even in these skills development programs, everything, it takes everyone to make sure that there's inclusivity going forward. So I think that's the point I also needed not to forget to emphasize. So, but more importantly, if state-owned companies are not there, some of these may have not been realized. So I think adding to a discussion around the future of state-owned companies, we are realizing that actually you still need them to perform a lot of this work. What I shared with York is a timber player. They had certain issues that we engaged them in as far in relation to SAFCO. I said we would never want to see a private sector company go down. We will have to find a way of resolving the problems. But we realize that the problems that are there are of a market nature. So we have to open new markets where both a state-owned company and a private company can go together and exploit a new market. I think if we can get that model right, we'll get somewhere. It becomes problematic when a state-owned company and a private company compete on the same product. So there has to be somewhere where we find each other, around Dinel mainly also, that meaning we'll have indabas, that's what I want to get through to, seminars where we bring in stakeholders together so that now, as South Africa incorporated, how do we structure the markets? How do we approach the open markets outside so that we all survive and we become competitive? I think that I needed to close there. Thank you very much.
Thank you. DJ, Honorable Kumubela, I saw your hand. Honorable Sadi.
Thanks. I think what we need to work together on is the winning aspect of the development. When I listen to this issue, there are things that are not being done which are supposed to be done. And we are government. We are the ones who are supposed to be doing those things. And I think we need to move beyond that whinging phase and determine our fate. And I think until we pass that phase, we will not be respected by South Africans. Where I'm sitting, I know, for instance, Chair, having listened to this, I got reminded of this book, says that this book written by this South Korean, if I'm right, Kicking Away the Ladder. This book speaks about how Northwestern developed countries developed. How do they avoid African countries following the same path in developing? And I like the picture. The picture, you've got European countries on top, successful, and the ladder they used being kicked away for the African countries to follow the same suit. It takes you through the, for instance, America versus England, how America for more than 100 years closed itself to free trade in order to capacitate itself, and then it gets to the free trade area. And all these kind of things, England being the leader in the free trade, and Netherlands and so on. But as you follow other countries, that thing evolves. But every country deliberately took a step to be where it is. You go to South Asian countries and so on, all these countries, But there is this thing in South Africa after 20 years. I think this is what we are worried about. That we believe that some miracle in our case is going to happen differently. We are these spiritually blessed ones who should simply wish things and then things then are to and things too. We were oppressed, now God has set us free. The next thing God must give us is what is happening in Asia whilst we're sitting at our homes. Not actually putting a clear plan to make them happen. For instance, if you speak about shareholder compact, I want to presuppose that the predetermined results should be in that shareholder compact between the state and the state run autocar company. And again, you need to have a sense that in doing the development supplier, in doing supplier development, the state-owned companies must demonstrate structured relationship with these multinationals and whoever to transfer what to call skills. Because history will show you greater percentage of skills have been transferred from other countries to other countries, but there's always been a structured plan on how to do that. The word leverage is being used properly here, that a multinational company needs business. How do we work together so that we give you business and then you help us develop our country towards its independence? Unless those structured policy frameworks and plans are in place, I think the committee chair must be reluctant to listen to the department. That's the attitude I'm adopting. Must be reluctant to the department whinging when there's no clear plan to correct that. And I think the department, in my view, should say, indeed, we understand these problems, but this is the line we're taking. This is the role of Parliament to assist us to make it happen. Because next time, unless it has been done before, Chair, my proposal is that we need to have a department presenting before us that the DG, having analyzed all that, having made that problem statement in the manner he has articulated it, the credible thing is what policy is in place to turn that around. Maybe the next time we meet, there should be that presentation. Because my worry is that time is not on our side, and the technology now is outdating a lot of other things that were still clinging on and rendered our country irrelevant in terms of being able to self-determine and so on. So I'm saying in future, it's my strong proposal that let's have this proposed plan to turn around these things so that we are able to say, what does it help us to deliver by what time? And at what point will it have a dent on the balance of trade? At what point will it have a dent on the GDP? At what point will they have, and I can list all these key strategic fundamentals, these the economic fundamentals and so on. At what stage does it intend to have? Well, all I'm saying, it becomes urgent. If that policy is there, maybe it can be shared with us, but I'm saying the sooner we move into that and talk more about what we're doing to turn these things around, I'm worried about us being at the mercy of multinationals. I'm worried about us being at the mercy of a committed CEO of a state-owned company. Being at the mercy of those people. Actually, the attitude I think we should adopt is that you stay in your job provided you do what you are here for. But what you are here for must be concretely articulated. What you are here for, it must not only be known to the department, the parliament must also know what is it that the CEO of ESCOM is here for. In the context of these things, you speak about development, transformation. These are key words. Development, what is the CEO of ESCOM here for with regard to those issues in concrete, predetermined objectives? So that we work together, so that you stay here as long as you fulfill the reason of you being here. And if you don't wait for 5 years, we negotiate with you. in a year, it doesn't seem you will deliver. Let's get somebody who will. And then my argument is that in South Africa, we've got a lot of skills. We've got a lot of committed South Africans. My attitude is that we don't give them these opportunities to do these things. We always give these opportunities to unfortunate individuals. And unfortunate individuals sustain us in an unfortunate space with unfortunate consequences. And that leads us to become an unfortunate nation.
The last one, DG, I think I like the process, the verification process that you spoke about earlier. And I was asking myself, if in the process of you verify, you realize that this company claims to be black owned, while it's not black, what happens? What do you do? Yeah, that's my last one.
Thank you. DJ, could you quickly... Mind our time.
Okay. No, just one issue, Chair. Maybe it is, even if it's not responded by now, I would want to get an understanding from the department as to how do or where do they locate the resonance of the community component as they execute their duty. Because as we claim to be a to be developmental state. In a developmental state, one of the attributes of that is that you have communities that are able or are capacitated to participate in their own development. Then in your strategies to empower service providers to actually rise to the occasion and have the necessary capacity, where do you locate the ordinary person on the ground? La mama waselusikisiki nala tata nala sisi nala buti. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll give over to the...
Well, Chair, I think I note the inputs and the council, because I can hear some are questions, but also they inspire our thoughts on how to approach certain things, and I think practically speaking we are thinking that way. Even ourselves is getting worried that history will show that I was once a director general, and during my tenure what is it that I found, and when I leave what have I achieved, and if my conscience does not rise to that, then it means I was not worthy for the job. And practically, that is what drives me every day. I try hard in every engagement I find myself in to emphasize these issues, particularly with the leadership of the state-owned companies, including other supporting departments, because the economic cluster, it needs each other for us to achieve something. We need the DTI in terms of the incentives. At first, DTI had a view that they would not give incentives to state-owned companies. But we over time engaged them to demonstrate to them that for this program to succeed, there has to be supporting incentives, particularly to the very same SMMEs that we want to create. So that we are working out the how part. That the incentive does not necessarily have to come to the state-owned company directly, but it may come to the beneficiaries in terms of the new suppliers. So we're looking at the modalities on how to do it. But also, I think in terms of how to expand on the shareholder compact, we are looking at it. Maybe let me explain this part. Mbono. Mbono, I think I'm saying it correctly. Mbono. Yeah. She is heading one of the programs she's heading. It's a program where we have signed MOUs with universities across the country. And the intention there is to make sure that we involve now our
intellectual capabilities of the country to assist us with new innovation for the future on how to come up with better plans that can liberate the country economically into the future. So each university, we are contracting with it on their area of specialization. Some universities may have not developed that specialization, but through working with the SOCs, they may be able to develop that capability. So that we know the University of Venda is located in Venda, they could be able to identify certain things research-wise that may be able to assist, but through a state-owned company, they could also stimulate the economy around Venda. I think that is a way, because now we are saying state-owned companies, you do not declare dividends. Through our CSI program, community CSI program, we are also readjusting it in such a way that we are preambling it this way, that a percentage of your annual revenue needs to go into CSI, but we will predetermine what is CSI. All along, we had left CSI to them. They will choose to give fund a crash here. We said no more that. We want CSI to fund programs that, by their nature, are economic and developmental. And we also have signed programs with provincial provincial government. So I've signed an MOU with the Director General of each and every province, where we have conceived certain projects in relation to state-owned companies. And then we know that Eskom in the Eastern Cape, it is committed to do 1, 2, 3. I think we have that. We'll try to share that with the committee once they are defined. And then it's a way of bringing state-owned companies now also closer to the people, so that they are able to resolve. Maybe let me highlight it this way. There are certain areas where private sector will naturally not go, because maybe they would consider it risky, or markets that may not give them immediate returns. But state-owned companies, because we say they have to be big enough in terms of their own balance sheet to be able to stimulate those markets, and then only then private sector can come. That's how development works. And we're trying to champion that cause as a way. So I'm already talking many things, but I'm saying when we structure them in implementable programs, I think then they will become clearer and clearer with time. But we need other departments. Already we are bringing in the DTI through the former deputy minister, so that they can also buy into that program with provincial governments. And then if three or four departments together with state-owned companies come in one area and do a big bang, they could with a local municipality, then there will be a result. We've seen that it has worked with Medupi Power Station in Lephalale. Lephalale today is different from Lephalale 10 years ago. And we have to mobilize like that as a way of stimulating local economies. But then through the SEZ, Special Economic Zone Program, and the IDZ, then we can also locate manufacturing into those areas. Now you are solving bigger problems of population migration as a result of economic, by making sure that you develop even sparse areas, because that's where people have invested. They live there, they have invested. You don't, because at the moment you look at them, you read certain, you realize that certain narratives, those places remain labor reserves. And that's not what we want. We don't want to perpetuate that. We want them to be sustainable livelihoods where their economic activities happen exactly where they live. So I think that's a broad picture, which we will, of course, and as time unfolds, we will clarify it. The fronting, it still remains a supply chain issue at a company level. But this independent verification, we will be verifying against the numbers that they have given us to say
you have given us this report that these are the numbers. We have done independent verification, and it tells us a different story. Now they have an opportunity themselves to punish that company that has misled them. So, but also they know that they cannot continue, they cannot lie to us, because we have a system that checks their reports. So I think that's the intention. So I think I've covered all the responses that I have.
Thank you very much, DJ. With that note, and also seeing that there are no more follow-up questions, let me take the opportunity in thanking the department for the department coming to us and presenting, briefing us on these issues. I take it the department also is aware of the environment, on what is taking place outside. So we will be calling you maybe even during ungodly hours, but if we need your attention, we will call you time and again. We will not wait for the program of the committee. There are urgent things that need attention, like the one that we spoke about, the one that is on Friday. We will seek the legal opinion, but we will see what next can we do. Thank you very much. And members, we still have three items that we need to deal with. I think we need to do it very quick, because we've we are working against time. There's a meeting at 12:30 that I need to attend in the chief of office. Thank you very much. Honourable members, let's check the report of let's look at the report of them of budget vote of the budget vote. If it's possible, I take it we have read it. If it's possible, can we go paragraph by paragraph, not sentence by sentence. Mm. Paragraph by paragraph.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
Paragraph.
Mr.
Tedi.
I've read the document. And I want to make some few comments in relation to page 11 and 12. Which to me are the two critical pages. Can I start? Yeah. The first one, Chair, is on litigations. The government is faced with a lot of issues that end up in court, unnecessarily so. And this department, our entities, are not an exception. And other departments have now adopted an attitude which says, by the time you decide to allow the matter to go to court, you must be convinced if you have a winnable case. Maybe it's an attitude that we must adopt as a department. This meeting is chaired by an MP.
Let's wait for this. No, they can go to another room.
Jisang cannot chair. He's not a member.
Jisang is not chairing. He's capturing what you are saying.
The point I was making is that government is faced with by the way, we're still in a meeting. There is a standing decision of the portfolio committee to meet with the Minister of Public Enterprises on this issue. So my take is that we must not entertain that briefing that took place outside this meeting. We have invited the Minister of Public Enterprises to a meeting which must take place on or before Friday on a matter which is of public interest. The information that you are now narrating to us will be presented in that meeting, and the portfolio committee will then take charge a way forward in that particular meeting based on the input that you will make. As far as I understand, that meeting still stands.
The minister is not available Friday, because Friday, in the evening of Thursday, there's this waiting event. Something that is going to be presented on Friday morning. There's a deeper thing on the issue. The first thing that on the writing, still on the writing aid. So it's a 2-day meeting. Friday, Friday, and also the issue that she is not going to give us any information on what we are looking for, because the DA has taken her to court.
On that issue, we are looking at it. Please find out, because I don't understand why the minister is saying she cannot be trusted. Parliament, similar venue, which is a closed session, where it's only us, we don't allow media or any, even their staff is not supposed to. It's only the committee where we can talk with her, she can do that, so that's all. So when we feel like we need an opinion there, we find that we need to be the opportunity. Because we did this with energy, and energy gave everything this country really clear. The minister then came, we had a closed session. He had that meeting, there was no problem. So, the response to her is that we are still seeking a legal opinion on the issue of, on this very same issue that she is in court, and also the issue that the portfolio committee wants her to come in. We are still looking for a legal opinion on, and then considering it closely, and considering that the response that we need to be taken on Friday.
Because insisting on it, on a 2-day meeting on the 8th of agency, in my take, it's unamended one.
But that's not determined by
her. It's not determined by her.
Whoever. It can't be right. I mean,
can we call her into this meeting now?
We're talking about an issue that is of public interest.
You don't want
to. You can't insist on going to a 2-day meeting where there is an issue of public interest.
Friday.
You must end up going to the agency, third day or second day, and try and utilize that other day to come and be with us.
Do you want to stand up with the minister?
Yes, if it comes to this.
Okay. I'm looking at a situation where it's clear we are not ignoring the materiality of the legal situation, but we're saying, what if then it's a closed session? That's a different issue. Two, that she had these meetings around rating what to call agencies. That is not a minor issue, the issue of rating agencies. So what I'm saying is that we stand at risk of debating which one is more important than the other. And to me, that is a risky space. I would prefer, if comrades don't mind, if colleagues don't mind, that the agency should not be changed, but let the chair negotiate the best possible time within reasonable time to meet us. It may not be Friday, but within short time. But if you discuss and find one another, I'm worried of a situation where by the time she comes, they were already at war. Unnecessarily. That's my attitude. I usually believe that let's fight with people who anything necessary to fight.
The issue is that things are happening over a weekend sometimes, and we don't know. what will happen over this weekend, because we won't be able to call each other and come to a portfolio home in the
He's like he has never attended the meeting of the group.
Honorable Jerry, you want to
make a Honorable Chairperson.
In the very onset, this is baptism is fine. Okay, continue.
The point I was making earlier. The point I was making earlier is that we need to adopt an attitude as a department, as a portfolio committee, which says we must never allow a department, our department or one of the entities, to allow a case to land in court when we have not yet verified if the case is winnable. So all I'm saying is that I will appreciate if there is a recommendation that talks to us, ensuring that all the department and all the entities only engage in the process to ensure that cases that land in court are winnable. That's one point that I'm making. So I'm adding to the recommendation that we have on litigation.
Honorable Gungs?
I'll come back.
Finish up.
Okay. That's one aspect.
Okay.
I'm not sure if Honorable Chair would have a problem if we propose that the department present us to us the policy that guides court appearance. Well, my attitude is that we don't have authority over when they should go to court and where they should not go to court. That's an executive or to court function. But for policy and oversight purposes, we're entitled to critique their approach. In other words, if we can ask them to present to us, and then we use it as an opportunity to deal with that matter and resolve it between us and them. I was making that kind of a proposal.
That is the proposal. Is there any second or more emphasis? Or are we fine with it?
I'm comfortable with that approach.
Great. It's accepted, sir.
And
let me welcome the Honorable Kwangwa.
Oh, he's here.
The DP. We are on the
recommendations
below. Yeah, you can shoot anywhere if you did get it.
The second one, Chair, is on the...
I'm still addressing Honorable Kwangwa. You must be governor. Are you still on the floor?
Yes, I was still on the floor.
No.
I was stopped by Honorable Gumubele while I was still on the
floor. Yeah, you stopped him. It came back to me. I should hand it over to you. Before it comes to you, I welcome the Honorable Gumubele. Thank you. So, are you fan of Honorable Gumubele? Sure. Okay, over to you.
The second one, Chem, I'll appreciate if there is a recommendation that talks to... the shareholder compact availability, I don't see it there. Looking at the notes, it's one issue that we've been talking about. From the observations, there is an issue around the shareholder management bill. 5.2. But looking at the recommendations, it does not come back. So if it does not come back, it means... So I've noted it is not there as part of our recommendations. I'll appreciate if that issue of fast-tracking the shareholder come back from the observations can still come back to the recommendations. The second last one, it's on the corporate social investment programs. I've seen it somewhere in the document that these investment programs are not adequately reaching rural and poor communities. I've seen it somewhere there, but it does not. Yes, all I'm saying is I will appreciate if it can as well come to the recommendation that we must ensure that these corporate social investment programs adequately reach poor and rural communities. And the last one is on the issue of the budget of the department being biased towards administration. I've seen it as an observation. I will appreciate if you can as well come back to the recommendations that we need to find a mechanism to ensure that a bigger chunk of the department does not go towards administration. Well,
maybe, can you check at 5.5 if it does not
address
5.5? Consider the reallocation part of the recommendation from 60% of budget.
That there is a research in the committee or a content advisor. Are they here now?
Yes.
See, my critique is that I will accept if I'm attacked for not having read and made that comment up in advance. I'll accept that. I'm pretending I will be silent. Myself, that the critique of the document is mainly on governance, not on the substance of the department as it pertains to the development situation in the country. And that, to me, is something that going forward we need to improve on. Remember, state-owned enterprises are about being tools for the state to impact on the development and improving the capacity of the country. So it's important that our critique should mainly focus on that. And we can deal with governance issues, that's fine, going forward. But I wanted to propose that, remember, we listened to the DG, that we require the department, I don't know what the right English word to use, that they share with us a policy perspective on the imperatives for SOCs with regard to transformation and development. Because I don't think we should continue listening to them whinging and complaining. They need to demonstrate the proactive intention to turn the situation around. So a policy on the imperatives for SOCs with regard to transformation and development. Of course, when we talk development, it will be, it will include the supplier development, the capacity, and so on. You know all those elements that in your better place is your specialty. Maybe there's a way to couch it. It's okay.
When we have meetings of this nature, the Secretariat is taking notes of the issue regularly.
Then we are giving over to you with the help of the researcher and the content advisor. You come back with us with the recommendations and the committee assistant. You all are always in the committee, so you know everything that is happening. You come back with each and every recommendation that you think we have done for each and every entity. You beef up the report and you bring it to us with all those recommendations, and we remember the budget vote is on the 25th, ne?
Yes.
Members, that should happen quickly before the 25th.
Yes.
I'm not coming with anything new as such, but I want to say, then that is an opportunity to the content advisor, whoever. To make a sound committee report that goes to Parliament must have critiqued the performance generally of the SOCs. Nothing like that here. It's not there. And I think our main interest in how these SOEs are performing on their mandate. Governance issues are critical. Processes, your nuclear, and whatever, fine. But let's, even if it's one or two paragraphs, a critique on how they have performed. Because it becomes a platform to debate more substantively rather than spending a lot of our time on governance. Governance issues are very essential, but on their own they mean nothing if we do not talk to the mandate of the state-owned enterprise.
Welcome, Ngaba. Benbone is under circle.
Yes, Chairperson, even though I've lost my trend of thought now, I can't even remember what I wanted to say. Siyabulela, the issue, I agree entirely. I think this point goes back to the strategic objectives of this department, and that what we can do, for instance, in building up on what was said earlier, to say that we need to zoom into each and every single strategic SOE and come up with a recommendation that speaks to it, is to also look broadly, in broad terms, in terms of what are these strategic objectives, 1, 2, 3, and 4. You might be able to cover them in one or two recommendations. For instance, I was looking at the industrialization of the South African economy, which is a development aspect of it, and we're saying, are these SOEs indeed doing that to a large extent? It's an important question, and I think the point where it says that there must be some kind of critique of the department, then it can be put under.
I want to call Honorable Kongubele into order because, yeah.
Ayebe Vumanje, why did you call him to order?
No, he didn't say what he was doing.
Oh, okay.
No, then
I'm saying, Chair. Uthi nawo wapha kum. Ayizange ngixakwe. So I'm saying broadly we align them with the strategic objectives when we assess the performance of these entities. But I'm also very concerned, Chairperson, that I remember Honorable Mazone was still here when we were fighting about this shareholder management bill even last year, saying we must give it some kind of a timeline, right? It's still open-ended in my view. It's still very open-ended. The department can come back to us in 2019. It won't be a problem. I think they need to be put under pressure insofar as these matters are concerned. But I think we also cannot... I heard Honorable Tseli earlier saying that the content advisors can come up with anything and so on. I think we also need to give them some kind of broad guidelines when the draft document is a good, so that we don't just give them a blank check and end up with a very long list of recommendations.
Thank you very much. I think this is enough, ne, on the report. Comrade, you, Honorable Mare.
I used to share that with now, confusing this thing of telling you and
in the army, they talk about SOP, Standard Operations Procedure. So I just want to, on conclusion, on point six, I just make the sentence that the DA actually deserve their right, because we normally take it to the caucuses, all the 38 budget votes, to decide which ones we support and what the case should be. So I just want to make that point. Thank you. And I want to minute it like that way.
Thank you. We are done with the budget vote report. Are we done?
We are done. We are going to take care of the... but in terms of the adoption of this report and the process of processing it, it must come from the committee. But the committee is saying that we are adopting it, and then with this, it must go back to the committee to see the committee can see that we have dealt with the critique of whether they are indeed delivering in terms of transformation and industrialization. Yeah. But it must be mandated that the committee has adopted the report. you must go.
Okay. With all the amendments, we have,
Nomination.
Adoption. Honorable Nobanda. And
seconded by
Gungubele. Ah, why? Can we move to the other report, the consideration of the and adoption of the oversight report. Oversight report, have you looked at it?
Yes.
Page 1. Yes, dear. Last bullet, ne? I don't think that was said by Nhlongo. And then under response from Eskom, the third sentence from the bottom, ne? On paragraph 1. Nabona paragraph 1. Where it says, I think it starts, let me start more, in the debt of the customer would be suspended for 3, with the A, 3A. And then paragraph 3, Eskom reported that was no forceful installation. Only something says short term. Yes. Page 4. Interaction with pensioners. More your first paragraph, where you say no consultation, forceful installation of prepaid meters, pensioners not benefiting from social package. Which social package? Remember, Eskom was saying they don't have this. We were struggling to get to Kuti. Is it for municipality and what is the municipality offering? Yeah. And then 1, 2, 3. Your third paragraph, ne? You are saying pensioners oppose da-da-da-da-da-da. They complain, and you are stating their complaints. Can we put them in bullet form? Yes. And then the second thing, the paragraph after that one, where Eskom also responded, can we put them in bullet form? And this, there is an expanded social package that caters for the elderly and those who can afford. I don't understand this one. I think it still goes back to that thing for the Eskom was saying they don't have such. And then under page 5, meeting with community of Soweto. Your 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Bullet number 6, an allegation that the father of a counselor, blah, blah, blah. Can we rephrase that? Because I don't think that father was the only person with that problem. Maybe if we were to say, okay. Okay. Last page. Minister of Corporate Governance and Traditional should consider 4 point. This one, né? Because we were saying external social packages, municipalities, basic electricity quota is uniform across municipalities. I don't know how possible is this. I get how municipalities are graded, and they are different in grading. So you might find for a Soweto has its own grading, that is why their basic electricity basic is such and such, because they are not the same, that's free basic in A. So maybe if you can check this, because I don't think it will cover all other municipalities. And then 4.9, investigate situation where there are different suppliers of electricity. I got a question, Mike, I don't know what I was going to say. Mara, you will see. Conclusion. The first sentence, the committee encourage community members who afford to pay for electricity and those who are indigent to be registered and given the subsidy. Visa subsidy. We are done. All the members are happy that I covered everything.
No, I'm
happy. You're happy. Oh. You are forced to be happy.
As long as it's honorable,
nobody. Members, are we happy with all the amendments that have been done in the report? We'll do that. The report will be amended. Do we adopt the report with all the amendments? No, that gentleman at the back. The one next to Mr. Mara. Kwangwa.
Yeah.
Not to formulate that we adopt with all the amendments.
Yeah.
Luyenge second.
The last one is consideration of
minutes.
Of the and the adoption of minutes.
Can we cover? Please, we must leave now. Page 1. Please change the date, 22 February 2017. Yes. And your khatiki, your vein. And page 3. 3.4. America, King Anglo-America, that part airing some of the mines they sell. I don't understand where. Page 3? 3.4?
What's your first one?
No. The first one was on the date and the vein. It mixed up a little bit. Where 3.4, clarity was sought on the coal mines owned by Eskom and concern was raised that Anglo-American was some of the mines selling the mines to BEE company. And then 3.4, what is this? Okay. On that note, we adopt.
Adoption. The correct change of the amendment by Honorable
Obama, Honorable Sage. Second. Obama is a common denominator
between the areas. Mr. Mayor, do you have something?
Yes. Okay. If I remember correctly, we've decided that the lady over there would give us feedback about the application for the study tour.
Oh.
And it can't be
humbled. We've never humbled from 2014.
This committee does not.
We don't humble.
Let's go to South Korea.
South Korea is.
Okay, so the companies that was in the proposal is the UK, London, and the Netherlands, which is the Amsterdam. And the one closer to us is Amsterdam, which is the same separation of powers between energy and the share owner, and then how they implement it. It's similar to us. And then in the UK has one holding company, one specific holding company for all the entities, and they have one board that reports directly to the parliament and to also then the CSG also has something to do with it. So they have one holding company and they're responsible for all the specific companies that they want in the that they still want to keep. And separate there was also a banking institution, which is where all the development stuff is, but they're separate, and then they've got another holding company for everybody else. So that's a different, completely different from what we have. So those are the two models. So the Netherlands would be similar because they're very close to us, and it will be easier for us to implement something similar as what the Netherlands has, whereas it will be the UK something where they put the holding company, so it will be happy to do legislation, change legislation and everything. So that's the two options that was proposed in the proposal. Before that, obviously, I did do the other one with the other company, with the other countries, mostly in the East. But then, and like I said, when we spoke to the deputy minister, he said that the countries they were looking at that was influencing the policy was mostly London and the Netherlands. All the developed countries, so we are looking at what the developing countries, which we are developing, so looking more for what they have, but they are aspiring to develop countries for what they have. So that's the proposal at the moment. So I don't understand if this is how much it is.
Committee member, which country do you want to go to? The Netherlands.
The first option is Netherlands, and the second is London, England. Yes.
I agree. First option, Netherlands.
Okay, first option, Netherlands. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then and you'll do the application.
And if they allow, we can combine it, but they see.
Yeah. We can go, for the first time, we can go to Netherlands, and then the second time, we go to... We can take them in one trip. So we must submit the
Okay,
now the
report from the minister. As we have said in the committee that we need to meet the minister, the board and the, yes. So the minister herself is saying we can meet, even if we can meet where, when, she is not going to say anything on the issue of the CEO of Eskom, and because she is in court, the issue is in court, and she has already received izinto zase court, whatever, summons from the court. So she's not going to speak to the public to compromise herself on speaking public with issues that are on the court. She is going to deal with the court first and then come back if it still has to come back to us and come and give us a briefing on what is happening. She is adamant that she is not going to tell us anything on the issue of the CEO of Eskom and all the other developments that have come up, that because the DA has sent her to court.
Yeah, I've received that, just the legal opinion. I can read it to the members.
Or the response of the legal opinion is here. We said we are going to seek a legal opinion on the issue. So the response of the legal opinion is here.
Yeah. It says the sub judice rule has been considered by the court to be archaic, as the courts are not easily influenced by the deliberations of Parliament during its oversight role. However, we still have the rule NA rule 89, because Parliament considers the deference to a court that is seized with a matter is respectful to that arm of state. The rule has been amended to only prohibit reflection on the merits of the case.
Mm-hmm.
In short, there is a constitutional duty to perform oversight, and the intention of calling the minister and the board is not to influence the court. While the matter is sub judice, meaning that it is before the court, this does not mean that Parliament cannot perform its oversight function,
mm-hmm.
as long as the deliberations are not on the merits of the case.
Mm-hmm.
What the merits of the case means is a bit problematic, as the same questions that would emanate from the oversight would be what the courts would have to consider in this matter.
Mm-hmm.
If this can be managed to get the submissions from the parties without deliberating on the merits, whether it was rational or not, then we are fine. Otherwise, we can request for the rule to be suspended of the NA. Not performing oversight in this regard also has the attendant risk that a court may pronounce on the failure of Parliament to call the parties to account for effective oversight.
Mm-hmm.
Hope this helps. If I need any further considered opinion, I can consult the thing.
I usually feel I don't have energy to debate how to undermine whatever law. Listening to provided not on the merits, that alone closes the case. Because I cannot imagine a committee that has got this wonderful art of making sure that as you engage the department, you will avoid dealing with what you call with merits. Oversight work is a very involving interrogative work. There might be questions that the committee wants to be satisfied with. In the process of doing so, you might do exactly what the court would actually be doing. I'm not sure if we want to insist on this matter.
No, thanks, Chair. Not, Chair, I wanted to maybe persuade the committee that in the light of this, because there is a very thin line that separates what we want to do and that what the court will be doing. And in us executing our duty, we won't allow a situation whereby either the department or the minister and the board will say, no, on this one, I feel I must not respond to this one because it is part of what I must say in court. So in the light of that, there is that thin line is actually sophisticating this. Maybe without a chair, maybe jeopardizing any party in court, let's maybe wait for that process to be concluded, and then we get that briefing after that process. Otherwise, we are held hamstrung.
You know, before we got into the exercise, I wanted to suggest something, but I'm not sure if this is the right platform to suggest it to the DA. That we seem to be rushing too much on the things. If we can first discuss these things within the committee, and if the committee fails your opinion, then you go beyond the committee. I would suggest that, because now we are not going to get our own chance of dealing with this thing because it's in the court. If we can deal with them. I'm not saying it's the process. It's a legal process that I'm suggesting, but I think going with it to the courts, it made us now to be quiet. It closed our mouths as an oversight body of Parliament. If we have dealt with it here in Lendo, the minister wouldn't be as arrogant as she is, I'm sorry to say that, as arrogant as she is now to deal with the issue. She would have been called to the committee, and then the committee deal with the issue, and then after that, we see, then, or parties see what the parties can do after that, because really now, it's the thin line that you are speaking about, we might be crossing that line unexpectedly, and we will get caught without without knowing that we have crossed the line. Honorable Mare.
Since you mentioned the DA, so I will respond on that. First, I want actually to ask that legal opinion be circulated by all the members as soon as possible. If you recall it correctly, last portfolio meeting, last Wednesday, the deputy minister used the following words because I've written it down. Brian Molefe didn't resign, he stepped down. Suddenly everybody is now playing with words. And we're sick and tired of that. That's why let the court then decide what is the real issue here. Because you spend taxpayers' money, 30 million, it is ridiculous. There's no other way about it. So I'm ashamed, and the minister could be arrogant because the top six of the ANC called her in to reprimand her. But that should have taken a long time ago.
No, Honorable, it's like we're discussing this issue now. I had thought
the issue was only done last week. And the issue of the 30 million came up a week before last night. So it calling the minister within that time, I think it's a reasonable time for the top six to have called the minister. It's still on the correct on the correct time. So it's I don't think we need to discuss that. But I'm saying now we as the situation is now the. What is the committee suggesting we do? Because to me, it looks like we are failing. We're not going to be able to call the minister and the board to come and explain because of the court interdict.
I'm one of those who I was saying,
I told you I don't like you to talk.
I'm one of those who are saying you must insist on the minister coming to this court. And if there are those issues that you think she cannot respond to because they have got nothing to do with the court, she will say so in that particular moment. And I'll tell you why my attitude is that one. And I don't want to make decisions. Surely the issue that we are talking about, which is of public interest, might take already that we wouldn't be where we are if we were having a minute who has and when to be fired by the European Commission. Because this briefing that led to this situation should have been given to the Procurator Committee long time ago before this issue was released. All I'm saying is that you'll have to convince me why the meeting has decided that the Procurator Committee should not proceed. And if on the basis of whatever would have asked, between those issues belong to the court. She will say that in the particular case.
Hey, Chairperson, we are stuck between the devil and the deep blue sea here. Because the problem is that, yes, we might call the minister, say she comes here, and we say that she must come and brief us, she can come here and decide not to answer any of our questions. Not, which will defeat the purpose of the exercise. So you know what that chairperson wouldn't even funa hapa. I would ordinarily, and under normal circumstances, I would have loved for them to come here to brief us and to account to us. But I think the circumstances are actually dictating otherwise. It's going to be extremely difficult for us to proceed and to question the ministers. Because remember, on that particular day, we'll be asking questions because we want to understand the reasons behind those decisions. And it would be very difficult for you not to deal with the merits and the demerits of that appointment. Right? So I think let's rather wait, but it's actually unfortunate that the minister has to be arrogant to this committee. I think it's maybe it has to do without the executive in this country views themselves that, I don't know, they are a super arm of government, and it's something that we need to address in future. Even when the minister comes here, I don't think we ever have a situation where, say, the chairperson says, no, she was dealt with arrogantly by the minister, and then she gets away with it. Because then it sets the tone. It sets a very bad tone for the engagement between the department and the portfolio committee. Right, going forward, it needs to be addressed up front. And the budget...
Let me put it as she has put it. Because we were going to call her and say, Minister, brief us on what is... We're not going to ask questions before getting the briefing. She is saying she is not going to brief us on anything. Then why would we call her? Then if she is saying she's not going to compromise herself on briefing the portfolio committee, whereas the portfolio, the DA, which is part of the portfolio committee, has sent her to court. That's what she's saying. So that's why I'm saying let us wait. I'm suggesting that let us wait and see how these things are unfolding. Then we can call her in if we still need her. We can call her, and then he addresses us, he briefs us on what is happening. By the look of things now, it doesn't look that it's going to happen. Honorable Kungubeni.
My little proposal is that for the reputation of the committee in public, there are people who are trained to do that. It's important to issue a statement, even if it's a paragraph, expressing what the committee wished to could have happened and how the current situation undermines that. And then you leave it there. And then you send a message that the committee did demonstrate a strong interest in dealing with the matter. Because can you imagine if we're just quiet, and we had a discussion with her in the corridor. So, no, by the way, we discussed with the minister, we could know, but how do we know that? Mm-hmm. It's important to send a message that the committee did show interest in dealing with the matter. But the circumstances, and then we leave it. You don't need a lot of full page. Could be one or two paragraphs. Your guys know how to couch that.
Thank you very much.
Done.
Done.
Go back.
The meeting stand at 10.
No, but I'm going to take it.